You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting marketing or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. So what is different about today's show? Well, Lori is not here tonight. She will return next week. This is Rod Young hosting in place of Lori tonight. Like Lori, I'm a CPA and CFP with the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. I've hosted a number of times in the past to help give Lori a break and look forward to our show tonight. And Lori, if you're listening out there, I hope you're enjoying your time off. I'm not sure where you are, but I hope it's a great vacation for you. And let me just say, everybody, that Lori is a tough act to follow. So hopefully I'll come reasonably close to the high standards that she sets week in and week out on this show. You have us live on the radio. Also remember, we're on the web at www.yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online at www.wdiy.org. So again, good evening, everyone. And as I was preparing for today's show, it struck me, I really admire Lori for being able to do this on a weekly basis. It really is a daunting task at times to prepare information to, valuable information, hopefully, for you folks listening out there that's going to fill, a whole hour. So I think my tendency is to come hopefully a little over-prepared, and sometimes I don't get through everything that I hope to be able to talk about. Okay, today, Wednesday, July 11th, 2012, now's time for just a quick review of the U.S. equity markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 12,604.53. It was down today 48.59 points, or about 0.38%. So not a good day for the Dow, but year to date, and you wouldn't maybe realize this based on all the news you hear out there, but year to date, the Dow is actually up 3.17% through the close of the market today. The NASDAQ index was down today at a level of 2,888, down 14.35 points, or down about 0.49% for the day. Year to date, the NASDAQ is actually up almost 11%. So, any of your NASDAQ-based investments presumably are performing fairly well so far this year. And the S&P 500 index closed flat today. Literally, it's at 1341.45. So that's a change of 0.02 points, which means 0.0%. So it was flat for the day. Year to date, the S&P 500 is up 6.67%. So far, for the year, these major indexes, are up. And as I was preparing for the show, I thought about the fact how each week, we give you this market information on the show, and I thought maybe it'd be worthwhile spending a couple minutes just to giving you a little information and background on exactly what these indexes are before we get into our full topic for the evening. We hear so much about these indexes; they're reported in the news, all forms of media, every single day. That I thought perhaps a little bit of history might be interesting. But whatever you do, don't mistake me for a stock market historian. historian. That I am not. But just share a little bit of information with you about them. Before I do that, just want you to remember this is a live call-in show. And we certainly welcome your calls. It helps make the show, I think, just a more real show for everybody out there listening. And it's got to be a lot better than just listening to me talk in a monotone for the next hour. So each week we have a topic, and I'll introduce that topic in a little while. And we will try to work around that topic and just dig a little bit into particular issues. But please call in. And then, by the way, the number to call in, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Andrea is here this evening, and she will take your call. You're welcome to join me live to ask your question, or you can ask Andrea the question. She'll jot it down for me and pass it on to me. You can also email your questions to www.yourfinancialchoices.com. Feel free to ask a question about the topic that we're going to be talking about, or feel free to go off topic and ask your question about any other financial planning issue you may have. We discuss general financial planning topics. We don't get into specific investments on the show. And as Lori would say, want to remind our listeners that this show talks about your financial choices and understanding the implications of those choices and how they might affect your taxes, your cash flow, your estate plan, your investment plan, your retirement plan, insurance plan, and so on. So let's get started. Okay, I said I was going to, before we got into the topic, I said I would talk a little bit about what are these major market indexes that we report these numbers on to you each week. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you might be interested to know, it's been around for a long, long time. It was actually introduced May 26th of 1896. So this average has been around for well over 100 years. And it used to be, it was originally intended to be an average that took a look at kind of the industrial sector of the economy. The average, there have been stocks that have been changed and replaced in the average over the years, so it's now a little bit more of a cross-section of how the 30 of the largest companies in the U.S. are performing. It's not just purely an industrial company average any longer. Locally, at one time, Bethlehem Steel was a part of this average for many, many years. And certainly there's household names that represent the 30 stocks in this average. And if I rattled off the full list to you, you'd probably recognize the name of every single one of these companies. Alcoa, American Express, I'm just picking a few, Boeing, Bank of America, Caterpillar, Cisco Systems, Coca-Cola, GE, and GE, by the way, is the company in the average that has had the longest continuous run of being in the average. It was actually in the original average that came out in 1896, and it has appeared in the average uninterrupted since 1907. So GE has been part of the Dow, since the very beginning. I think there was some period of time between 1896 and 1907 where it was not, but it has been a continuous part of the average since 1907, so over 100 years. The two newest members of the Dow added in 2009, just as a little point of reference, Cisco Systems was added. The computer networking company, they were added in 2009. And Travelers Group Insurance Company, that was added in 2009. Over the years, there have been, over the 116 years, there have been 48 changes made where companies have been removed from and replaced by another company, in the Dow. Let's see. What else do I have here for you? Originally, there were 12 stocks in it. Now, as I said, it represents 30 different stocks. And I think that's maybe that's good for a kind of a brief, brief overview of the Dow. So when we're going to go on break here, and when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about the S&P 500 index and the NASDAQ, and a little bit of background on those. So I'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. Any condition is accepted. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Hi, everybody. Rod Young, CPA, CFP, here in place of Lori Siebert tonight, hosting Your Financial Choices. Remember, we're a live call-in show. I've been talking a little bit about, at a very high level, about stock market history. The number to call with your questions, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Andrea's there. We'll gladly talk to you, take your call, put you on live with me, or jot down your question and hand it to me. And I jumped the gun a minute earlier. Jeff probably thought I knew what I was doing tonight, but I clearly I'm a little rusty. But anyway, so we just got done talking about the Dow Jones and a little bit of the history of that. So let's talk briefly about the S&P 500 and how long has that been around. So the S&P 500 was, Standard & Poor's, which is what S&P stands for, introduced its first stock index back in 1923. And up until 1957, it published primarily what it was known as the S&P 90. Then on March the 4th, 1957, the S&P 500 index in kind of its present form began. So that one has been around for a little over 50 years, if my math is correct. The S&P 500, you'll be interested to know, and I think this is as it is with the Dow. So the components of the S&P 500 are selected by a committee. And so there are companies that can be moved in and out of a position in the S&P 500. Most of the companies in the S&P 500 are U.S. companies. As of May of this year, there were a handful, 15 non-U.S. companies that were represented in the in the S&P 500. The highest point that the S&P has ever reached was on October 9th, 2007. Where it reached 1565.15. And as I just said, it closed today at 1341.45. So that's 200 some points lower than its all-time high. And when you hear the statistics about the performance of the S&P 500 index, what you are typically hearing, and so when I say to you that the index is up year to date by 6.67%. That does not account for any dividends that stocks that are in the S&P 500, are paying. So it's purely a value-based index and does not account for those dividends. Locally, there are a few companies whose names you would recognize who are part of the S&P 500, such as Air Products and Chemicals. They are in the S&P 500. Airgas out of Radnor, Pennsylvania, is in the S&P 500. Amazon.com, which has a big facility here in the Lehigh Valley, part of the S&P 500. PPL, another local company in the S&P 500. and out of Philly, Cigna is in the S&P 500. Comcast is in the S&P 500. Hershey, we all know Hershey, so that's another company there, another PA company. So, you know, quite a few companies from Pennsylvania are represented in the S&P 500, and even a few few local companies. So that's a little background and history on the S&P. And then we have the NASDAQ, and that has over 3,000 components. It's an index of stocks that are listed on the NASDAQ exchange, NASDAQ stock market. And it peaked on March 10th of 2000. The NASDAQ peaked at 5,132.52. And as I mentioned earlier, it is currently at 2,888, so quite a bit off that peak from, you know, which was more than 10 years ago, prior to the whole dot-com bubble from the early part of the decade there. So that's just a little bit on the S&P. I'm sorry, on the NASDAQ. So we've talked briefly on the S&P 500 and the Dow and the NASDAQ, just to give you a little more information and background on those. So now, finally, after that little history lesson, I can introduce the topic to tonight. And as you know, we talk about many things on the show over the past few weeks. Lori's topics have included planning in a divorce, using trusts to pass assets to your heirs, children's responsibility for parents who are, in need of skilled nursing facility. So for tonight's show, as I was thinking, we're just over halfway through 2012 and thought it might be time for a good mid-year financial checkup. So that's kind of loosely my topic for the evening is let's go about talking of just a mid-year financial check-in and review. Back in May, last time I did the show, I did a top 10 list of financial planning things to do for 2012. So when we do this mid-year checkup, I'll touch upon a few of those items as well. So again, remember the number 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. This is Rod Young, guest host tonight on Your Financial Choices. Okay, so what are some of the things we should be talking about as part of a mid-year financial checkup? And it might surprise you when I say the first thing on the list to talk about is tax planning. Or maybe it doesn't surprise you since it is a CPA, since I am a CPA. But anyway, we'll talk about 2012 and 2013 tax planning. And why did I put that as number one on the list in terms of a mid-year checkup? We got plenty of time. It's not even 2013 yet, and we got plenty of time now between the end of the year. Well, it's going to be a very hot topic for the next 6 months. We have an election year, and income taxes and estate taxes are going to be a huge topic of discussion during the coming election cycle. We're going to be hearing about it nonstop. At the conventions, during debates, and in all areas of the media. You have a couple other things that are happening, and they'll be talked about until we're tired of hearing about them, and that is, the possible expiration of a lot of the what are referred to as the Bush-era tax cuts that went into effect in 2001 and 2003. A lot of those were originally scheduled to expire in 2010. Then they got extended for 2011 and 2012. There's a lot of debate on should they get extended fully into 2013? Should they get extended partially into 2013? Should they not get extended at all? That's a very political issue. It's an issue that affects the economy. And trust me, it is an issue that affects every single person listening out there because the number of things that are affected by those tax cuts is very, very broad. The other reason it's a very hot topic is I'm sure you are aware, unless you've been out of the country and just getting back from a trip overseas. You know, on June 28th, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of the constitutionality of most aspects of what is, you know, commonly known as Obamacare, more specifically known as the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act, which are kind of collectively referred to as the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And there are some very specific tax changes that are happening as part of Obamacare. We're going to talk about that. We're going to go on break for a minute here, and when we get back, we'll start talking about those taxes.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 84 degrees under overcast skies. Tonight, patchy fog, lows around 59. Thursday and Friday, sunny skies with high temperatures each day around 90 degrees. And Saturday, chance of thunderstorms, high temperatures around 86 degrees. Folks, the time is 6:20. Now back to your financial choices.
Hi, everybody. Rod Young, CPA, CFP, guest hosting for Lori Siebert tonight on Your Financial Choices. We're a live call-in show, as many of you are aware. The number to call with any questions you have, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Email is available. You can email a question to www.yourfinancialchoices.com. So my topic for the evening is kind of a mid-year financial checkup. And the first thing we're going to really dig into as part of this checkup is income taxes. And specifically, and I'm already, you know, as a result of the Supreme Court's ruling a couple weeks ago, I am already being asked by clients. I've gotten emails about it. I've gotten phone calls about it. And it's been brought up in meetings with clients. What are the taxes that are going to coming about as part of the Affordable Care Act, as part of Obamacare? And so there are a few changes that start in, right away in 2013. Well, by right away, I mean 2013. And then there are quite a bit of changes that take effect beginning in 2014 and later. I'm going to focus on those few items that are going to begin in 2013. So I won't be talking about things such as the individual mandate and the costs associated with that, which don't take effect until 2014. This is going to be a very hot topic of discussion, and I'm sure we'll be covering it even further on future, on future shows. And I'll make sure to talk to Lori about maybe joining her for one of those shows and kind of teaming up and talking even more about it. And the reason we're going to need to talk about it on future shows is, you know, these laws were just really enacted. There's been very little guidance forthcoming from the Internal Revenue in terms of what to expect. And I'm not that's not a knock on the Internal Revenue. They haven't had time. It's, you know, the Supreme Court just upheld the law, and IRS has indicated they're going to be coming out with explanations and regulations here on the interpretation of some of these new taxes under Obamacare. So the couple of things that are happening in 2013. First of all, for those of you who itemize your deductions on your income tax return and have been able to claim a deduction for medical expenses, which are deductible to the extent they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, which is a pretty high hurdle for most people, but I have had many people who've been above that threshold. That threshold starting in 2013, that hurdle is now going to be 10% of adjusted gross income rather than 7.5%. However, if you are age 65 or over by the end of the year, So by the end of, you know, for 2013, by 12/31/2013, you still get the 7.5% threshold. The new 10% threshold will not apply to you. So that's a change. It's going to affect a number of taxpayers. It doesn't have as broad implications as I think some of the other changes, but that it will definitely affect some taxpayers. Here's one that could affect quite a few people, and that is not geared to anybody at any particular income level, and that is flexible spending accounts for health care. These are these accounts where you're able to put some money in on a pre-tax basis and then use it to pay for your medical expenses over the course of the year. The contribution limit in terms of what you're permitted to put into those accounts has been $5,000. Starting with 2013, the contribution limit is being reduced to $2,500. And that is for anyone. So you know, it's not just for people over a certain income level. Going forward after 2013, it's my understanding that that $2,500 limit will be indexed for inflation. So just to give you an example, someone who is in a 25% tax bracket, when you account for the income tax and then the keep in mind when you put money pre-tax into one of these flexible spending accounts, you also save Social Security and Medicare tax. If you had been, you know, say your family, you've got three or four kids, and so you've got a lot of out-of-pocket expenses with between co-pays and maybe some braces for your kids and what have you, and you've been putting the full $5,000 into the flexible spending arrangement. So going down to $2,500 now, if you're in a 25% income tax bracket, it's going to cost you about, it's going to result in $800 of lost tax savings for you in 2013. So that's one to be aware of. The next one is the, there are actually two additional Medicare taxes that are being imposed as part of the Affordable Care Act. The first is an additional Medicare tax on wages and self-employment income. So those of you, whether you're a W-2 employee or whether you are self-employed and report your income on a Schedule C on your tax return, there's going to be a new additional tax starting in 2013 at a 0.9% tax rate. So it's not that much, but it still is a new tax. It is targeted towards higher income, which they are defining as $200,000 of gross income for an individual taxpayer and $250,000 of gross earned income for a married couple. Your employer must withhold the additional 0.9% tax. Okay, that sounds pretty straightforward and easy. However, there's a new twist here, and the twist is how is this going to be applied in the case of a married couple, because your employer has no idea what your spouse's wages are. And the bottom line is that employers, when withholding the tax from you, do not have to take into account what your spouse is making. So if they don't withhold the tax, the individual is going to need to take care of the tax themselves on their tax return. So, for example, let's say you have one spouse who earns $250,000 and the other spouse earns $200,000. In this example, again, because it's a married couple thing, neither employer may end up withholding that 0.9% tax, but you're going to owe it on $200,000 of earnings. So that results in $1,800 of tax that you're going to have to make up on your tax return. Or what about the example where an individual changes jobs during the year, and maybe neither one of those jobs gets you over that $200,000 or $250,000 threshold, but collectively, when you combine the earned income from the two jobs, you're over that threshold. I think that's going to be another situation where you're going to have to make up for that tax on your tax return. We're still waiting for specific guidance from the IRS on exactly how that's going to work. But just again, to make you aware that this is you know, this stuff is coming. The tax that I'm being questioned the most about, and I'll introduce it now. We're going to go on break in a little less than a minute here, is the additional Medicare tax on investment income that begins in 2013. And that's the tax that I've received some emails about and have been questioned the most about. And it's because it's a tax rate of 3.8%, and it's on a tax on unearned income. So this has nothing to do with wages. It has nothing to do with your self-employment income on your Schedule C. It has to do with unearned income from investments and some other sources. And we'll define that in a little bit. So I'm going to go on break. I'll be back in a little bit, and we'll dig into that a little bit more.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you. Your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. The time now is 6:30, and we're back to our program, Your Financial Choices.
Hello, everybody. Rod Young back, guest hosting Your Financial Choices tonight, and doing a mid-year financial review, mid-year checkup, so to speak. And I've, the first item on my list to check in about is a very, very hot topic, and that is income taxes, particularly given the political landscape. We're going to hear a lot about it over the next few months. And given the recent Supreme Court ruling that will result in some new taxes as a result of Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. So we've talked briefly about a change affecting being able to deduct medical expenses, being able to put money into a flexible spending account for healthcare. These are all changes, by the way, that take effect beginning in 2013. We talked briefly about a new 0.9% Medicare tax on higher income wage earners. And then I just introduced the idea of this 3.8% tax on unearned income. Before I dive into a little more, just remember, we're a live call-in show. 610-758-8810. It's Rod Young, CPA, CFP. Would love to answer your question. Feel free to call in and talk to me live on the air. Andrea is here and will take your call, or she'll jot down your question and hand it off to me. So let me tell you a little bit more about this tax on unearned income. It's going to apply, it's again 3.8% rate. It's going to apply to individuals with modified adjusted gross income of $200,000 or more, and joint filers with modified adjusted gross income over $250,000. And very specifically, this tax will be 3.8% of the lesser of your net investment income, and we'll talk about what that means in a little bit, or the excess of your modified adjusted gross income over the threshold. So the amount your income exceeds either the $200,000 or the $250,000. So here's where this is going to get interesting, and where we're all kind of waiting for further guidance and information from the Internal Revenue in terms of interpretation here. Net investment income is defined as the following: gross income from interest. Okay, that seems pretty easy. Dividends, annuities. Okay, so suddenly somehow gross income from annuities is considered investment income for purposes of this 3.8% tax. Royalties, rents, those are all included in here. Gross income from passive activities is included in here. Net capital gains, included in here, less any deductions that you're normally allowed against such income. So, you know, knowing the way that the IRS works, there's going to be a lot of further explanation about these in terms of how exactly do you calculate this net investment income under, you know, for this new 3.8% tax. A real quick comment, when I use the word annuities there, I don't want anyone out there thinking that, okay, I get a monthly pension annuity from, I'm retired and I get a pension annuity from my former, you know, from my employer, former employer. That is not the annuity that we are talking about here. So I don't want anybody to think that suddenly their pension annuity is going to be subject to a new 3.8% tax. The law specifically excludes 401k, IRA, pensions, 403b, and those Section 457, you know, government deferred compensation plans. So you do not have to worry about that. So here's a simple, just a simple example. Let's use a joint taxpayer, for example. Let's say in 2013, you have total net investment income of $25,000 and modified adjusted gross income of $255,000. So in this example, the additional tax would be up $190. That's 3.8% of $5,000, which is the amount by which your modified adjusted gross income exceeded the $250,000 threshold. So that's not too bad. Let's assume the same net investment income, though, of $25,000, but your modified adjusted gross income happens to be $300,000. Now the additional tax is going to be 3.8% of your $25,000 net investment income. So that's $950 of additional tax. So there you are with the same net investment income and a very big difference in the tax here. So as guidance is issued by the IRS, we'll be talking more about these tax changes in 2013. We're expecting them. I think the important takeaway here then would be, okay, so what should I be doing to plan for these? And is there anything I can be doing? I think you want to incorporate some kind of expectation for changes as a result of possible partial expiration of Bush tax cuts. Be consulting with your advisors, but things like capital gains. Perhaps it may be better to take some capital gains this year or later this year than wait until next year when they may be subject to an additional 3.8% tax on the capital gain, as well as a possible additional capital gain tax if the Bush capital gain tax rate expires, which would take that from 15% to 20%. Take a look at your investment portfolio. Is there any way that it can be structured and to maybe mitigate these taxes a little bit? I always am very careful. I don't like to let the tax tail wag the dog, so to speak, in terms of, you know, how you handle your investments. But certainly you need to be keeping that that in mind because, you know, taxes that you pay eat into your net after-tax investment returns. So what else about 2012-2013 income tax planning? As we talked about, the Bush-era tax cuts are expiring. I've got a booklet I brought here with me. And if I wanted to, I could actually order a 450-page book that explains and goes into detail of all of the changes that would come about if there were a full expiration of the Bush tax cuts. It affects tax rates. It affects tax brackets. It affects deductions. Exemptions, tax credits, capital gains, qualified dividends, you name it. If it's in the tax law, individual tax law, it's probably going to be affected in some way, shape, or form by the expiration of those tax cuts. So just another reason that starting now, middle of 2012, to be thinking about and doing your what I'll call multi-year tax planning for 2012 and 2013, it's not too early to start and be consulting you know, with your advisors and at least becoming educated about what these new taxes are and how they might affect you and how you can plan for them. Okay. A reminder of the phone number. Call in with your questions, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And by the way, but this is just to, before I get off the tax topic, and this is a quote from Commerce Clearinghouse, which is a big income tax publisher. The changes to the Internal Revenue Code that are going to be enacted or have been enacted as part of the Affordable Care Act will result in amending numerous sections of the Internal Revenue Code, resulting in the largest set of tax law changes in more than 20 years. So there's a lot of changes coming down the pike. We've talked about those that start in 2013, and then there are more that we've only touched on. Talked about those that affect individuals. There are others that start in 2013 and then more affecting individuals starting in 2014 and later. So that's enough for on income taxes for tonight. So what else should you be looking at as part of a mid-year financial review? And here's one. And if you haven't done it already, take a serious look at either at refinancing your mortgage. And I touched upon this issue back in May and made the statement that if there was one takeaway I wanted you to have from that show, it was if you hadn't done so, take a serious look at refinancing your mortgage. And it's that comment still applies today. Rates have stayed very, very low. Even if you refinanced, 2 years ago, you may be very surprised at the change in rates just over the past 2 years. And I just I got some rates before I came in, give you an idea of what some current rates are. Now, these rates, by the way, I just need to qualify this. These rates are rates on the purchase of a home, not on a refinance. Typically, refinance rates, it depends on all the circumstances of the refinance, but they typically are a little bit higher than purchase rates. But to give you an idea of what the purchase rates are right now, FHA is at 3.25%. A conventional 30-year fixed, 20% down if you've got a good credit score, 760 or above, 30-year fixed is 3.5%. And a 15-year fixed, 2.875%. Think about that, a 15-year fixed rate mortgage at 2.875%. Again, just qualifying those are purchase rates. Refinance rates are probably a little bit higher. And also keep in mind, these rates are, change literally on a daily basis. But it can't hurt to be taking a very good look at that issue. If you've been thinking, one other comment on the whole mortgage rate environment, if you've been on the fence, if you're thinking about buying a home in the next year or two and been on the fence about it, the current low interest rate environment is not going to be around forever. I can't tell you how much longer it's going to be like this, but it is not going to be, it's not a permanent situation. And so these low rates are just, it's a great rate environment to get a really good, take a really hard look at making a home purchase if it's something you're going to be seriously thinking about over the next couple of years anyway. And if you're remotely ready to do it, I'd be looking at that because of these currently low rates. Okay. So we talked about taxes as part of your mid-year checkup and talked about a refinance. How about doing a checkup? I harp on this one all the time whenever I'm on the show and I get a chance to. Doing a checkup on your 401k plan. If for most of you, it's one of your largest assets right there with your home. And it just amazes me sometimes how much, how little actually people investigate the finer details of their 401k plan and truly understand them and take advantage. And so how do you go about doing a 401k checkup? Well, step one, And I say this to clients all the time. Whenever I meet with a new client and I want to learn about their 401k, the first thing I ask them is, do you have a copy of the summary plan document or summary plan description, commonly known as the SPD? If you don't, request a copy of it. Your employer will gladly give it to you. It covers all of the important aspects of your 401k, like vesting and the investment options and how the matching contributions work and the different types of contributions that are allowed, pre-tax, Roth, rollover, all of that. The next thing you want to educate yourself about once you get that summary plan description is how does your employer's matching contribution work? We're going to go on a break in a few seconds here, and when I come back, I'm going to tell you why it's very important to understand the nitty-gritty of how that employer match works. So we'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Hello, everyone. Rod Young, CPA, CFP, going into the final quarter hour of your financial choices here tonight. We've covered a lot of different things so far, been all over the map a little bit here, gave you a little bit of stock market history at the beginning of the show, a little bit of background on a couple of the major stock market indexes that we report to you each week on. And then we spent a good deal of time talking about income taxes. I know it's everybody's favorite subject, but we're going to be hearing about it a lot. So I figured I'd be part of where you're hearing about it a lot from. Remember, we're a live call-in show. So we do still have a few minutes left here that if you've got a question that's just nagging at you, give us a call at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Again, it's Rod Young. Andrea is here to take your call. If you don't want to be on live, you don't have to. She'll just jot down your question and hand it to me, or I'd be glad to talk to you live on the air. Okay, so we talked history. We talked taxes, particularly some of these new taxes coming in for 2013 from the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And then also as part of the overall theme here is supposed to be kind of a mid-year financial checkup. Let's kind of do a self-checkup here. So tax planning is a good one. I'm going to quick run down doing a 401k checkup. And I left off with understanding how the company match works. And what I've seen quite a bit, and it's been with some local companies here, is just be careful. Sometimes if you if you're contributed at the maximum that you're allowed to contribute during the year, which is if you're under age 50, that's $17,000. And if you're age 50 or over, it's you get an extra $5,500. So you get $22,500 in total. If you contribute too fast, you sometimes, depending on the way the company operates, the match, you may find yourself forfeiting some matching contributions. So just be careful, double check your plan rules that you're not contributing too quickly to the 401k. Spread it out over the year if it makes sense. At a minimum, when you're contributing, and I've beat this to death over the years, but I still feel I have to say it, at a minimum, maximize the company matching contribution. That's free money to you. If you need to, stretch your budget and get that, take advantage of that company match. If you do turn age 50 in 2012, make sure you are taking advantage of that additional $5,500 catch-up contribution for being over age 50. What else? Here's one that I always ask people when I first meet with them. Does your 401k offer a designated Roth account? And many people typically are not sure. These designated Roth accounts have only been around for a few years, but it gives people who otherwise don't have an ability to get money into a Roth account via in a Roth IRA, it gives you that opportunity to accomplish the Roth savings feature in a 401k. There's no income limits for it or anything. So find out if you have a Roth account and then talk to your advisor about whether or not it makes sense to participate in the Roth account. And then it's just not a matter of participating. It's also keeping an eye on the investments. So educate yourself about the basic investment options that your 401k plan offers, and come up with a strategy within the plan that, you know, fits your risk tolerance. And a lot of the 401k providers now offer some pretty good online tools to help you come up with an appropriate allocation strategy and what have you. So that's kind of the quick mid-year financial checkup on the 401k. What else as part of a mid-year financial review? Well, it's always a good idea, at least once a year, if not more frequently, to do not just a review of the investments and how you're investing your 401k money, but your overall portfolio. Look at perform an overall portfolio review and rebalance if necessary. So, what should you be thinking about in your overall portfolio review? You should be looking at your overall allocation, the asset allocation for your portfolio. Is it on target? Do you have any funds? And this is one of the ones where I see people the most frozen. Do you have any underperforming funds and investments? And people just continue to hold on to underperforming funds. At some point in time, you have to make a decision that it's time to cut bait, so to speak. And a lot of people get hung up mentally, well, I got to wait till at least gets back to what I put in it. And that's not necessarily the right approach. Has there been a change in your personal circumstances that would warrant a change to your allocation strategy? Ask yourself that question. If you haven't done so, you should get in the habit at least once a year to rebalance the overall portfolio back to your target allocation. And what I like about rebalancing is it instills a discipline of selling high and buying low. And by rebalancing, I'm saying, you know, if you have a particular part of your area of your portfolio that has outperformed, take those profits and reinvest them in some of the other areas of the portfolio to get back to homeostasis, so to speak, in the portfolio. Get back to the target allocation. Number five here in terms of this mid-year check-in is the perform an insurance review. And this can just be a quick kind of self-review. Look at your life insurance. Do you have enough? Do you have the right types of insurance? Do you have any term insurance that has a conversion privilege where you can convert it to a permanent coverage, and maybe that opportunity to convert it is going to expire? Is the way you have your life insurance consistent with your estate plan, from the way it's titled to the way to the beneficiary designations? Have they been coordinated with your wills and your trusts and what have you? Liability insurance. Do you have enough liability insurance? Look at your deductibles for your homeowners and your auto coverage. You can adjust those. Look to see if you could afford to adjust those, maybe increase your deductibles and drop your premiums a bit. do you have, and by whether or not you have enough liability insurance, do you have an umbrella liability policy? And this is one I talk to people all the time, and most people, when I first meet with them, do not carry umbrella coverage, and that's one of the first basic recommendations I'll make to people of all income levels and asset ranges is you should consider umbrella coverage. And what that is it typically it piggybacks on top of your homeowner's coverage and your auto policy, which typically maybe have liability limits of $500,000, which in this day and age, if something there were a bad accident, $500,000 doesn't go very far. So I say buy an umbrella policy and get they're sold in $1 million increments and get it for $1 million. And you'd be surprised how little it may cost. It's typically, you know, for $1 million of coverage, if you don't have any really odd risk exposures, you know, it's $200 for a $1 million umbrella liability policy. So something to take a look at. So you call your homeowner's insurance agent, your auto agent, and ask them, get a quote, ask them what it would cost to add umbrella coverage to your, to your property and casualty insurance portfolio. Another thing, if you're age 50 or over, at least consider and think about whether or not long-term care insurance should fit your overall plan. And what long-term care insurance is, if you're not familiar with it, is insurance that would provide some coverage if you needed to go into a skilled nursing facility or you needed skilled nursing care at home. And I say age 50 or older. You can buy it younger. It's typically hard to get people under age 50 excited or interested in looking at nursing home insurance. So, and you can buy it well into your 50s, into your 60s. The cost goes up, but you can certainly get it at later, at later ages. So something to think about. And disability insurance, yeah, that's probably insurance that you have through your employer. You probably have some long-term disability, maybe even paying through it through payroll deduction. Make sure you understand that. And the one thing I often say to people is if you're paying for your disability insurance through payroll deduction and you're paying for it on it's a pre-tax deduction from your pay, and if you're allowed to change that over at your next annual and open enrollment and make that be an after-tax because it has a big impact. If you did need those benefits paid to you, it has a big impact on the tax treatment of those benefits. So we've talked income tax review. We've got a couple minutes left here. We've talked income tax review. We've talked investment checkup, 401k checkup, insurance checkup. How about for those of you with who are saving for your kids' college educations? Do a quick checkup on your 529 plans. Review the investment strategy. Keep in mind you're only allowed to change the investments once per year inside the 529 plan. Take a look at how much you're contributing to the plan. Maybe you set it up on autopilot a while ago, and if you take a look at your cash flow and your monthly budget, you could afford to increase that monthly contribution you're making. So, and it's just kind of inertia. You forget to go and do it. I would encourage you to do so, because over time, it's amazing how that'll add up for you. Review the rating of the plan that you're using. A good website for checking out 529 plans is www.savingforcollege.com. Do a 529 plan checkup. A lot of 529 plans have had changes. I'm using one for my daughter, my high school age daughter, and was surprised via email that was going to be a total changeover in who was handling the investments within the 529 plan. That's happening with a lot of these plans. So read your email from your 529 plan or open those plan statements and see if there's been any changes. Again, review the investment options. Do a double check on where you stand with your college savings. Are you on track? Are you ahead? Are you behind? And there's some great calculators, and I know you can find them at savingforcollege.com, but there's some great calculators on how much do you need to save to be ready for college, which is, we all know, is probably one of the most expensive things we'll do in our lifetime, is helping our kids pay for college. I read in an article recently, someone suggesting, hey, let your relatives know you have a 529 plan, because you're not the only one who can contribute to that plan. Other people would be allowed to contribute to that plan on your child's behalf if you wanted them to. So just, a quick list of things that you can think about in terms of doing a 529 plan checkup. We're winding down here. We have about a minute left. It's been a quiet night, and that's okay. I came prepared to talk for an hour. So it's summertime, I understand. I know back in May when I was on, we had 6 or 7 calls, I think, that night. So hopefully my topic tonight hasn't scared anybody away. And, I really do enjoy doing this, and I'll talk to Lori about coming back as soon as possible, maybe joining her, and we'll come up with another good topic for you to talk about, for you to hear about. That pretty much covered it. So I've given you some history. I've given you some pointers on a mid-year financial checkup. Jeff, I appreciate your help tonight. Andrea has been here waiting patiently. No calls, but that's okay. Lori will be back next week, next Wednesday. And thanks for listening to Your Financial Choices. Have a great week, everybody.